Star Wars Legacy of the Force Round Robin Interview. Featuring Star Wars Legacy of the Force authors Aaron Alston, Betrayal, Exile, Fury, Karen Travis, Bloodlines, Sacrifice, Revelation, and Troy Denning, Tempest, Inferno, Invincible. Random House. Okay, let's cut to the chase. The death of Mara Jade at the hands of Jason Solo. Who came up with this idea, and how was it received by everyone in the initial story conferences? Troy Denning. That's your first question? You make us sound like a hit squad. Aaron Alston. The idea came up at our late 2004 meeting at Big Rock Ranch, but I resist saying who brought up the idea first. I'm not going there. Karen Travis.
I'm afraid it was me who suggested that Jason had to kill someone he loved. But I'm the Brit, remember? We're always the bad guys.
A.A. The idea was, if I recall correctly, met with mixed feelings. Everybody recognized the dramatic possibilities surrounding Mara's death, but not everybody was happy with the thought of seeing her go. T.D. But there were no fistfights, nothing like a deadlocked jury. We knew the storyline demanded a crisis that would shock Ben to the core and really make him think about what he was becoming. Nobody killed Mara just for the heck of it. KT.
I mentioned a test that the German SS, or it might have been the Gestapo, used. Trainees were each given a puppy, a German shepherd, I think, and were encouraged to bond with the dog, compete it against other cadets' dogs, and generally love it. Then, once they were totally devoted to the dog, they were told to strangle it. If they couldn't obey that order, they were out. I said that would be a typical Sith test, to be so loyal to the Sith ideal that you'd obey orders and kill someone you loved to prove you could put the job first. There's even an allusion to that in Sacrifice, where Jason thinks about the Nocito pups.
R.H. Given fan response to the deaths of Chewbacca and Anakin, did you feel any hesitation about killing off another popular character? A.A. Definitely. For that reason and others, it's the event I've looked forward to least out of the entire series.
K.T. Well, nobody lives forever. In fiction, it's often better that they go out in a blaze of glory than incontinent and senile in the Coruscant old folks' home. Readers are sad to see much-loved characters die. We wouldn't be doing our jobs right if those deaths left them unmoved. But very few fans resort to threats and abuse.
T.D. Good stories have tragedy as well as triumph. My first concern when writing is always to build a story that's both suspenseful and logical, so I'd never terminate a character arbitrarily. Overall, the reaction I received after I wrote Anakin's death was fine. People were sad, so was I, and a few were angry, but most readers agreed that Anakin's death was the kind of thing that has made the NJO a powerful and engaging story. KT.
Fiction should make us feel strong emotions. It enables us as readers to rehearse difficult emotional events in a safe environment. So deaths in fiction have a real function in human psychology. And frankly, the idea that heroes can never die isn't good storytelling as far as I'm concerned. If the reader knows nothing can ever happen to them, where's the drama? The risk?
R.H. One objection I've heard to the deaths of popular characters is that if readers want realism, they'll pick up a book by Updike. How do you respond to this? A.A. A lot of fans have that reaction, and a lot don't. It's not a universal thing. Those who object to the deaths do tend to be more vocal about it. T.D. You wouldn't be trying to stir up some controversy, would you? A.A. I keenly remember as a kid reading a novel about Robin Hood in which he dies. I was shocked. Robin Hood can't die. The story can't end. But the truth is, putting characters in danger and then never killing any of them, or at least any of the important ones, robs a series of any tension. Oh dear, Luke is in danger again. Ho-hum. And sure, we could have tension by threatening to make characters unhappy without actually killing them, but note that I said putting them in danger. Physical danger, danger of imminent death, has been a part of the Star Wars series since A New Hope. So either we have characters in danger and make that danger meaningful, or we don't have danger at all, which constitutes a major change to the way the universe is portrayed. KT.
Star Wars is a broad church, and there's plenty of escapist material already out there that folks can read if they want that. But there are also many, many readers who want something that resonates with the issues they face in real life. Like Aaron says, there comes a point where the story gets stale if the protagonists face no real threats and risks.
R.H., what were your feelings about the online contest to supply Jason's Sith name? T.D. I thought the contest was a good idea. A fun twist. Of course, we'll have to see how the fans like the winner they picked. R.H. Luke has gone over to the dark side before. Will Mara's death push him in this direction again? T.D. You must know we can't answer that. R.H. Hey, you can't blame a guy for trying. Come to think of it, Han didn't handle Chewbacca's death very well either. Knowing that his son has turned to the dark side and is responsible for the murder of his best friend's wife, it's hard to imagine even Leia being able to hold Han back after that. A.A. That's a weird perspective, actually. That's the perspective of someone to whom Luke, a canon character originating in the movies, is far more important than Jason, an expanded universe character. But it makes no sense from Han's perspective. Luke's his best friend, Jason's his son. He loves them both and would be devastated to lose either one. Instead of strapping on his blaster holster and rushing off to shoot his boy, he's got to feel horribly conflicted. R.H. Was Jason's turn to the dark side something that was only decided with this series, or was it a plot development slated for some time? Is there an uber-plot stretching far into the future? A.A. As I recall, it was settled upon for this series, though that determination was made early enough that Troy was able to foreshadow it in the Dark Nest trilogy. T.D. Yes, the kernel of the idea occurred to me while I was writing that trilogy, trying to think about what Jason discovered on his journey to learn more about the Force. When I learned that the editors at Lucasfilm and Del Rey were looking for ideas for the next series, I told them what I'd been thinking about, and it became the seed for Legacy of the Force. A.A. I'm not aware of any uber plot, though. We've coordinated a little bit with the Dark Nest and Legacy series to maintain consistency, but we're not setting up their plot lines in our series. R.H. Is there something about the parenting style of Han and Leia that contributed to the dark path Jason has taken? Do they bear any of the responsibility? K.T.
I wonder if any of the Skywalker Solo kids had a good upbringing. If Coruscant had a decent social services department, they'd have taken them all into care, I think. The risks they were exposed to as little uns were shocking. Ben's found his own way, which isn't easy for him. The offspring of the A-list can go nuts pretty easily, trying to live up to legendary parents, as we know in real life.
A.A. It's the generation gap plus lightsabers. T.D. Jason was captured by the Yuuzhan Vong and brainwashed by Vergeer. So he's been through a lot that wasn't his parents' doing. Ultimately, though, the only person responsible for what Jason has become is Jason himself. K.T.
Right. I agree that his experiences of the Vong with Vergeer did freak him and distorted his perspective on his own fallibility. But Jason is actually just a very smart guy with an excessively high opinion of himself. Like so many of those in power, especially the most able, he edges toward the bad stuff a slice at a time, and it's all too easily done, all too easy to self-justify. He doesn't start out psychiatrically iffy, But power corrupts, and also warps, and there's no doubt that power can seriously unhinge people. But there's no inevitability about any of it. Many, many people who undergo terrible trauma and nightmarish family lives don't end up being conniving killers, and sometimes, despite their best efforts, the most decent responsible parents produce appalling brats. In the end, the only person responsible for what we do is ourselves.
R.H. How did you decide the order in which you would write the novels of the Legacy sequence? A.A. Our editors, Shelley Shapiro of Del Rey and Sue Ross Tony of Lucas Licensing, decided that. R.H. How involved are Sue and Shelley, and how do the roles of these two editors differ? A.A. They're really involved, very aware of everything going on with the series, and their roles do differ. Shelley is a bit more focused on the writing merits of the novels, the coordination between the writers, the internal logic of the storylines outside the context of the expanded universe. Sue is a bit more focused on continuity, on the needs of Lucasfilm, on the meeting of fan expectations and fidelity to the characters. But if these different responsibilities ever put them at odds, well, they've never let me see it. K.T.
It doesn't matter in how much detail you plan. We do 40-page outlines for each book, and how much you talk to your fellow authors, you can't possibly know everything that the other guys are doing. That's why we need Sue and Shelley. Having two people with a more detached overview, and who aren't writing it, and so can see the wood for the trees, is crucial.
T.D. They're the grease that gets things moving, and the glue that holds things together. They probably work the hardest to make sure that all the minor but inevitable differences of interpretation in our initial story notes get ironed out. It would be hard to overemphasize their role in the series. R.H. How often do you three talk? And do you communicate mainly by phone? Email? K.T.
Email. I'm in the U.K., in a wholly different time zone, so phone calls aren't convenient. And I like things in a retrievable, checkable format anyway. We have spurts of communication, and then go silent for weeks. The books have to be written, after all.
R.H. What do you do when disagreements come up? T.D. Luckily, we share a brain, so we all agree. But seriously, it hasn't been a problem. K.T.
Everyone's focused on what's best for the series, not individual interests.
R.H. How has your understanding of the light and dark sides of the Force changed in the course of writing these books? K.T.
Not so much the Force as the nature of Force users. It strikes me as more and more sectarian every day. As Boba says, it's a small religious schismatic war within a tiny unelected elite that drags in trillions of folk. The reader obviously sees most of Star Wars with a heavy Jedi perspective, but I'd bet that the average galactic citizen knows no more about the Jedi Council and what it gets up to than most folk in the real world know about the World Bank.
T.D. I've always felt that when Yoda taught Luke about the light and dark sides, he was talking about the light and dark sides within ourselves, not in the Force itself. R.H. The Jedi of Yoda's day believed that romantic and family relationships between Jedi could only lead to disaster. Hasn't that view been pretty well borne out by the history of Darth Vader and his children and grandchildren? A.A. I think that the Republic-era Jedi belief that attachment leads to disaster is on target. But I hope we're going to show that not all love matches constitute that sort of attachment. My belief is that any number of Jedi could marry and have kids without invoking tragedy. I think part of the problem is that the Skywalker family is as important as, and about as lucky as, the House of Atreus from Greek mythology. That is to say, they're very important, but not very lucky. K.T.
No, I'm inclined to think Yoda got it right. Jedi shouldn't be allowed to have families. These people are superweapons, and once they lose the ability to detach, however much moral decline that so-called detachment got them into in the late Republic, then their family feuds will end up dragging in the whole galaxy. The legacy of the Force saga is basically a family spat involving an ex or two that creates galactic war. Do they see the irony? I don't know. But like all people with vast power and a sense of dynastic entitlement, they take their eye off the ball, and whatever they think they're doing, make decisions based on what's good for the people they love, not for the majority. They're only human. Trouble is, their powers and their influence aren't.
T.D. Let's not forget that a lot of good came from Anakin Skywalker's line. Luke, Leia, Anakin Solo, Jaina. We'll have to see about Ben, but even Jason was responsible for ending the Yuuzhan Vong War. R.H. Each of you is known for creating or enhancing a specific character. Alston, Wedge Antilles. Travis, Boba Fett. Denning, Ali Marar. It must be a blast to be able to weave them all into Legacy's multi-book tapestry. Are they your favorite characters to write? T.D. I enjoy writing most characters. If I can get inside their heads and really understand what they want and what they're willing to do to get it, then I can connect with them on a subconscious level, and they just come alive inside my head. When that happens, whatever character I'm writing at the moment becomes my favorite. A.A. Wedge is my favorite character, true. I've said in other interviews that he interests me because he's an ethical killer. The killer part isn't that interesting. From that perspective, he's a guy who always has a means, a motive, and an opportunity. No, it's the ethics that are interesting. His struggle to make each choice to kill a correct one, one that will not lead those he commands or inspires down some slippery slope, like the one Jason is following, for example. But I enjoy writing a lot of the characters, and I find it creepily easy to slip into Jason's mindset when writing him. We're not so very different, he and I, except he's better looking and has superpowers and is even more evil. K.T.
I love writing Boba and expanding his hideously dysfunctional family, and his total alienation from his own culture was right up my street. And inevitable. I find it amazing that the man is even sane, given his upbringing. He's incredibly complex, and that means there are plenty of stories to tell about him. But I enjoyed crazy Alima and Lumia, too. It was fascinating to write the scene with them together in Sacrifice, especially at how differently they handle disfigurement. I like the challenge of getting into characters I don't know all that well. I think the one I really savored writing was Admiral Neathel, though no idea why, but when a hawkish Mon Cal Admiral was mentioned in Eren's outline for Betrayal, I was captivated by the idea, and she just rolled out onto the page. And sick as it sounds, I enjoyed writing Jason. I feel better knowing that all those years I spent working with politicians actually came in useful.
R.H. Lumia first appeared in the Star Wars comic books, then made the jump over into novels. Whose idea was it to bring her back for this series? How closely integrated into the official Star Wars universe is all the old comic book material? My impression is that in those early days, there was a lot less attention paid to timeline continuity and so forth. A.A. Prior to Lumia being chosen, we had a character role, Jason's Sith mentor, who was referred to only as the Wizard. At some point, someone had the idea to make Lumia into the Wizard, and she was a really good fit. K.T.
I think it was Sue Rostoni's idea, actually.
A.A. Lumia's presence doesn't mean that every event from the comics can be considered a part of the current EU continuity, however. It just won't all fit. K.T.
Continuity is always a challenge in a 30-year-old franchise, but as long as people stay sensible about it, recognize the constraints, and that it won't ever be perfect, and treat it as fiction and not a religion, then we can all have fun. When the continuity matters more than the stories and themes, the saga will be over.
R.H. I know you can't give away any spoilers, but maybe some hints about what may lie ahead in the remaining books of the Legacy series? A.A. Hints without spoilers? That's tricky. How about this? There will be pages. Lots and lots of pages. Most of them will have letters on them, and the vast majority of those letters will be in the Roman alphabet. Ah, now I feel better. T.D. You'll definitely see some grand space battles and classic lightsaber duels. K.T.
Boba doesn't grow a heart of gold, I can tell you that.
R.H. In addition to Star Wars, each of you also has his or her own projects. How do you keep the balance? A.A.
By working all the time.
K.T.
I split my time 50-50 over the year between tie-in work and my own copyright novels. I'm pretty dull. I'm a business, and I run on spreadsheets.
T.D. I tend to work like crazy on one project, then come up for air and dive into the next one. I've heard of writers who work on two or even three books at once. I can't imagine how. When I'm in the middle of a project, I have a hard time thinking about anything else. Phones go unanswered, the mail stacks up, my hair gets long. R.H. Troy, you look good with long hair. Thanks to all three of you for taking the time to answer my questions with such patience and good humor. May the Force continue to be with you.